Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Kenny Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast. This week for the PGA Championship, it's major week, baby. As usual, I am here with my boy, Tyler Tambourine. Tyler, how are you this week, brother?
I'm doing well, man. It's a major week. We're back. Love this. The Byron Nelson was awesome. We'll talk about that in a second. Before we get into it, just want to remind everyone very quickly, this podcast is brought to you and presented by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself 10 bucks off the first month. Great time to do it with major season back upon us here. We've got the PGA Championship. We're going to get to that. But before we do, Kenny, it's another Korean week on tour, man. I love these. Ever since being at the Honda with you live when Sungjae got the job done, KH Lee takes it down and just ran away with this thing.
Yeah, the man went ham. It's eighth Korean to win an event in PGA Tour history, shooting what, like 11 under on the weekend to get the job done, which is pretty solid. The guy was just on point with everything, making putts, iron game was solid. And you see number two, Sam Burns, the win definitely didn't falter his hopes for the next week. The guy played well. I mean, he's somebody to look at. 5 36 hole leads. This was his fifth 36 hole lead of the season. Nobody else on tour has more than two. So Sammy Burns balling out Kazire. Another guy I said, don't play again, play Kazire during the pod last week. And that worked out with a hell of a fucking round four. Berger, great round. Final round, it's going to probably drop his odds a little bit. I think it already has. Scott Stallings, low-key, been playing really good golf here recently, probably the last month. Probably the best month he's had in a very, very long time. I'm not sure if he's in the field this coming up week. I don't remember seeing him, so that's a shame. And Charles, again, probably another guy, best month on tour in a long, long time. We might be seeing some Charles chalk this week at the PGA Championship at $6,800. But yeah, it was really good seeing Korean win. I liked him trying to speak the English at the end, you know, even though it's not his best thing. I like to see him do that. He seems sort of like a fun guy. I like KH Lee. What'd you think of the event?
Yeah, I definitely thought his, at the end, the speech there and doing it in English, and then said, I need to learn English, Amanda, and telling her that, it was just kind of funny. But, you know, he did his thing, and it was impressive to see, like you said, some of the ways he came out. And now I'm really excited, Kenny, because he's going to be popped into this DraftKings field, and I could put him and Canadian Corey Connors into the same lineup and get the FGD combo to start all my lineups off, because I just think his game can carry over. He looks pretty good all day, and just no fear. Like you said, came out strong, kept it rolling. Burns was very impressed. He played with them all day. You know, Charles did his thing with that weird putter. So it was good. It certainly was not the Bryson Nelson that we thought it might be. Going back to that for 2 seconds, dropping down the board all the way down to T55. It was not the Bryson week we want to see, but that could be good. Coming into this week, I don't think anything will shake Bryson ownership, but at the same time, guys like him and Rahm finishing down the board here maybe could help a little bit this week. And then, you know, some other guys still did their thing. Spieth was still right there in the mix. Zalatoris, another top 20, not a top 10 this time, but he's still doing his thing. And then Berger, we'll get to that because he's going to be extremely popular based on the pricing and just what he's been doing, but probably rightfully so. So excited to get into major week, but it was certainly a good event, man. I like this one. The course was, you know, obviously just getting crushed all day Thursday and Friday. You know, it got a little bit harder as the weekend went on, but then again today guys went out and just destroyed it again. it's just what it is. It was the same at Trinity Forest. You know, if the wind is not there all week, or a lot of wind and weather, it's going to get beat up and scored on. But like we said, coming in, new course, new style, didn't really want to bring in something too hard for these guys. So a lot of good storylines we could bring over to this week, both good and bad. Brooks is one to talk about, I think. Another interesting case here coming in. But yeah, we'll talk about it, Kenny. Other than that, thought it was a pretty good week.
Yeah, personally for me, the cash game strategy worked out with Spieth up there. Did pretty well. McCumber actually withdrew, but I ended up switching out him for Sung Kang. So he made the cut, so it worked out. So I easily cashed with a 5-6. Peters didn't fall through, missing the cut on the number. But, I mean, Zalatoris Torres finished 17th, making the cut on the number. I think he had the birdie 18 on Friday to make the cut, which really stressed me the fuck out. But he had, 10 points less than Spieth, who finished in the top 10. He almost had 100 points out there on the course. And, Snedeker was right there with him with almost – Snedeker actually outscored Zalatoris. This past week, shooting minus 16, I had him in my lineup too. So solid, still going to go with that this week. The three guys I think he can win and a punt. I had a really tough time with cash this week trying to narrow it. I got like six guys in my pool. I'll go over that for this week, but I decided to narrow it down. I went sort of more balls to the wall. We'll talk about it when we get to that point. But before we get there, how'd you do, Tambo?
That was close. It was another down week, but it was a couple shots. I actually got 59th or something in the main tournament, I think I was telling you. But yeah, I played Wyndham Clark instead of KH Lee for $100 less. And that would have been the difference of taking the thing down. So everybody has those every week. Not going to sit there and harp on that. That's just how it goes. But, you know, close getting, just like Spieth and Berger this week, man, you don't want to give it all away the week before the major. We got some pretty nice tournaments out there this week for DraftKings. A lot of big ones that I'm going to be playing in. So I'm excited for this week, looking for that major victory for myself, actually. So we'll move it over to this week and bring it into the PGA Championship, Kenny.
All right, so let's go over our Listener League winner for the week. Let me go. I think his name was Hank Hill 9, if I'm not mistaken. Let me bring it up here. Hank Hill 09, no avatar. Must be a King of the Hill fan, I would guess. Maybe a Texas guy. It could be. You know, maybe he won his own state's tournament this week. He had Scottie Scheffler, a Texan. 33% owned, 86.5 points, finished in 47th place. Still had a bunch of birdies and eagles out there. Bogey for round as well. Sam Burns, who's just been playing really, really well. It's amazing how much his game has lifted off this season. Hopefully it continues. It's not sort of like a Brendan Todd type of deal. But he's won more of these tournaments like in the regular season too. So 131.5 points, finished in second. Leastrin, 5.54% owned, 96.5 points. I didn't like him this week. Finished 21st. Keith Mitchell, another decent finish for him. 10% owned, 92 points. Finished in 26th. Jonathan Vegas, another Texas boy. 16.62% owned, 104.5 points. Finished in the top 10. And he had the winner, Mr. K.H. Lee. Solid 9% owned in our league, which is nice. That's a pretty good percentage, 147 points. And, of course, he is our winner. What'd you think?
Yeah, just destroyed it, man. I love the build. It looks good. You know, when you're getting a guy like Scheffler in there, Vegas a little bit chalky, but find a way to get different, and definitely did with Leishman. You know, nobody, I guess, and Lee, of course, like I said, it was nice to see Lee a little bit more owned here. But, you know, with Burns and Mitchell, it was almost like people really didn't want to go back to the well on top of the fact that, as we've seen lately in these 156-man events, the ownership is just getting spread out quite a bit as it is. So you can't play everyone, or, you know, everyone has their guys that they like to play. So it just got spread out a little bit there. But yeah, Burns is just on a tear, like you said. Interesting tidbit around that, not just to segue from this, congrats to Hank Hill 09, but just to tie in to your Burns conversation, is he did say after in his interview that he's never even seen the course before. I'm sure there's lots like that, but just, you know, the thought process of that might be, you know, it's new to him. He's going to learn everything when he gets there this week, he said. So see how that carries over. I think he'll get some ownership now, coming off a win in a second and looking pretty good driving the ball out there. And then Leishman will come up today for sure when you and I talk about not just Leishman, but maybe his fellow partner, Cam Smith, that they just took down the Zurich Classic together. So those names will come up for sure. Other than that, solid lineup. We'll definitely see Hank Hill 09 in the three-man this week. So congrats to him.
I would say the majority of the field hasn't played Keogh yet, probably. I mean, when was the last major? 2012. So I would say a lot of golfers in this field are in the same boat when it comes to that. But let's get to Kiwa. Kew Island is a 7,800 yard plus behemoth. Four par fours, or four par threes, four par fives. The course can play shorter or even longer when you take into account the wind and multiple tee boxes on each hole. The wind is what will make this course play extremely difficult. It sits right on the ocean, which in itself will make the course play difficult, but there is really no prevailing wind. The wind can shift directions at a moment's notice, which makes judging shots very difficult. 25-plus mile-per-hour winds are currently in the forecast for next weekend, so we could see a bit of carnage. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I think looking at it right now, it looked like there was like 15-mile-per-hour gusts Thursday and Friday and up to 25 Saturday and Sunday, but we're recording this Sunday night at 7 o'clock. So, you know, anything can happen. And, of course, so we'll see how it really goes off. And, you know, make sure you check the tee times and the wind and the weather on Wednesday for some type of wave advantage. I'm not sure how they do the tee offs here. Is there, do you know if there's a break or do they just play through?
I'm not 100% sure, to be
honest. We'll have to see. The tee times haven't come out yet, so we'll have to see that as well when the tee times come out and see if, how they go about spacing out the tee times. Off the tee, golfers will see somewhat wider fairways than what they're accustomed to at majors, just not at Augusta. But the problem is that they missed the fairways. First off, the course hasn't seen too much rain lately, so the fairways should play extremely firm. There will be a good amount of rollout, which in turn makes the fairways smaller. If golfers just miss the fairway, there is some rough that could hold the ball back from falling into dunes or native areas. But from what I have heard, there's not that much rough. And the rough that is there isn't that tall. So what I've seen from the videos and stuff like that is like a lot of like if there's bunkers and stuff on the left side of the hole and there's like a sand dune on the right side of the hole, the rough will be there will be a good amount of rough around the bunkers on the left side. But there will hardly be a rough line on the right side, so the balls can just roll into the dunes. That's not every hole, but that's just looking at the videos and stuff like that is something that I noticed. Now, a lot of wayward drives can get in those dunes, and I don't think the dunes are going to be that difficult of a shot for these golfers. First off, I heard that you can actually play it as a regular shot, like it's not a sand shot. When you hit it into those dunes, so you can like lay your club on the ground. You can try and get the feel of like, you know, the sand and stuff under your club to see, you know, practice swings are allowed in those dunes where you can actually hit the sand. So I think that should make it a little bit easier. But the thing is, if you hit it a little bit wayward and you don't get into the dunes, there is this native grass that is like, I don't know. It's like this tall, dormant, nasty looking depth of hell type bush grass out there where if you hit it in there, you know, chopping it out is really the only play. Now on approach shots, golfers will see larger greens when it comes to square footage, but there are some very small greens on the course as well. To me, it looked like the larger greens are on the par threes and then all the other greens are a little bit smaller than those. And they're very, very elevated. They're super elevated. Like the person's wife or something who designed the course, I think it might have been Pete Dye's wife. I'm not sure. Yeah. It is a Pete Dye course. Said she wanted all the greens to be elevated above the dune line so golfers could see the ocean when they putt. Now, what that does is it actually brings the wind more into play when it comes to putting, especially because – so that's just another factor when it comes to putting because it's going to be more exposed since it's going to be above the dune line and you're going to get a lot more wind that way. So it's another thing golfers have to think about when they line up their putts. The sides of the greens are closely mown, so any shot that is near the edge of the green can easily roll down into collection areas. And since the greens are so elevated, this will make for some really tricky, tricky up and downs. Now, luckily for the golfers, the grass on the greens is pass pound, which is a slow green, and the firmness is easily controllable. The stimp should only be around 11.5, and the green should have some give to it when it comes to approaches. I'm guesstimating here. This is usually what we see when it comes to pass pound. We'll see how they actually have it play. I mean, if they don't water and it becomes, you know, concrete, they could do that too if they want. But that's usually not what the PGA of America does for their major. That's sort of a U.S. Open type thing. So I would expect the greens to be receptive. Not like, you know, spin it all the way back from the back type of receptive. But you're not going to get that humongous first hop and roll out on short irons. and stuff like that. So I think that sort of gives the edge a little bit to the longer hitters when it comes down to this place, because they're going to be hitting those shorter irons. The greens will be a little bit more receptive, and those shorter irons should be able to receive the greens should be able to receive those shorter irons a little bit more forgivingly than what if someone's hitting, you know, a 5-iron or 6-iron out there onto these greens. Native grass, bunkers, dunes, and water will be in play on wayward approaches. In my opinion, success this week will come from, you know, keeping drives in the fairway at a decent length, long iron prowess, up and down play, and avoiding a big number. And of course, trying to figure out your irons and your approach play and stuff with the wind. Tambo, what are you looking for this week?
Yeah, back to a major week. Nobody gives a better course preview than you can. You just laid it out perfectly. I think one of the biggest things that come to mind, though, is this weather and the situation based around that. Like, we'll have to see leading up to it. It's very important this week, I think, to keep that in mind coming towards Wednesday, just what we see, because the course can play completely different if that's the case, right? So we'll have to see how that goes. Obviously, this is Sunday night. We're doing a first look, going through it, going to talk about all these ranges and whatnot. But for me, you know what I'm looking for at majors, Kenny, same as I always say, it's going to, you know, come down to roster construction. And then the guys that I can, you know, see actually winning this thing, as far as it's a major, it's tougher the long term. When we get a lot of guys playing guys like, you know, Sam Burns, who we just mentioned, or Corey Connors, and we've got some real major prowess in and around, I'm going to typically look to move to that just from past experience to be able to bring it in here. And then there's other guys that just, for whatever reason, you know, Sergio Garcia can't seem to show up at a major, even though he'd be one of the guys that would normally fit into that range. So we'll talk about it as we go through it, but it's going to come down to that. One of the biggest things, I'll segue us to the top here, Kenny, is Rory McIlroy. You use this guy at 11,500. He literally just won his last time out, got the job done at the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow, third time winning there. Huge momentum coming in. Game looked solid. Everything was there that would fit this course. And now he's coming back to the course that he just crushed and had set the record at back in 2012. Someone who definitely has seen this course and took it down. So the thing about that is, when you plug a guy like that in, you've got like $7,700 left to spend. So there's definitely ways to do it there. You know, if you've got him winning, you got to get him in there. But I just think not only is there other guys around him, but that was my roster construction nugget there just to bring up, is that it's really hard for those lineups to get there. You need so many things to go right on top of Rory McIlroy to be the winner. So it's a lot more, you know, that you're looking at there. And he doesn't necessarily have to win. I'm just saying you need a lot out of an 11.5K golfer. So what are your thoughts here up at the top and on that? And then what are you doing this week with cash and whatnot?
Let's talk about the pricing here a little bit. I mean, just so you know, there's 20 PGA professionals that made this event. Yep. So, I mean, those people are on the low 6K, 6.1 range. So on your take when talking about playing Rory, you can't go super low like you would be able to do with like I would say Augusta, but there's a few of those guys that you don't play either on those. But it's hard to find those, you know, 6K guys, like really low 6K guys. You sort of got to start in the mid 6K. So that sort of limits your roster flexibility when you do start with Rory. Now, I don't mind starting with Rory. I'm not against it at all. Other things about this week would be, it seems like it's soft pricing. So it seems like it would be easier to get 6-6. Like, you look, you got Finau like 8,600. You got, Scheffler at 85, Hatton at 8,000, Abraham Answer at 79, Neiman at 78, Connors at 76, Burns at 75. It seems like it's softer pricing, which it normally is when it comes down to majors. But the one thing you got to realize about this week is the weather will eliminate, there's going to be some chalk misses because of this weather. If it's as windy as people say that it can get on that course. Now, I remember Kiowa from 91 more than 2012, but that was a totally different course back then. They actually added about 50% more landing areas since then. It made it a lot wider, a lot more spacious. But I mean, it's the wind that I remember from those weeks, you know, the whipping wind. And if it gets to that point where you're looking at like 30 mile per hour gusts in the afternoon on Thursday and Friday, especially Friday, I think you're going to see some guys that people like this week fail to make the cut because it's just hard to predict how they're going to perform in these type of tougher conditions. We do have some statistics and some type of, you know, form when it comes to these windy events, but it doesn't always hold true. You know, if you have a bad day sleeping one day and you come out and it's like 30 miles per hour and your swing's just a little bit off, you can shoot eights here really easy. You can get an eight. You can get snowmen on this course, which is just plummet you down the leaderboard. So I think when it comes to cash this week, I'm still going with my main, with the way that I've been thinking. I had two different cash game cornerstones this week. I'm going with the one that's a little bit more aggressive. And I'm going with Rory McIlroy as my first cash game cornerstone. You know, the way he's played before, the way he dominated Kiawah in 2012, the coming off a win, hitting that cut, hopefully it's a bit more accurate than, you know, at least you would hope that it's a one-way miss for him. So he knows where he's going to miss. The last time he went out, he still missed a little bit. But I mean, he was still working on it. He had a couple of more weeks to work on that cut off the tee that gives him a little bit more accuracy. He's still going to pound it out there. God knows how far. I think he's a favorite for a reason. I think he will. I think it's his tournament to lose, in my opinion. So I was either thinking of going uber balanced, or I was going to go this high road, and I went with the high road. I'm going with Rory as my first cash game cornerstone this week. What this will do more than likely. Now, I even thought about going Rory and using 50% of them as well in GPPs. I'm not completely sure I'm going to do that. I'm going to use them more than I will for most cash game cornerstone golfers that I use. I will probably try and be right around his projected ownership when it comes to GPPs as well. So he's going to be a big factor for me this week. I know Tambo has different thoughts about this. I think that's what it's going to be. I think I'll probably still have 25% of them in GPPs because I just think that he is just far and away the guy to chase this week, especially after his play at Quail Hollow, which was, you know, of course, another PGA Championship course. So Rory will be my first cash game cornerstone. Another guy I do like in this range is John Rahm. Really good in the wind. I don't know what his ownership is going to be here with just being decent average this past week. But maybe he's getting used to having a baby. Maybe he's now is time. It was just trying to get everything together and focus for this week. I think, you know, a major is going to come for him soon. I think eliminating John Rahm in majors is not the best idea because he's going to win one eventually here, I think, sometime soon. So I like Rahm a lot. He actually in moderate win conditions, he's first in strokes game total in the last 50 rounds in this field. If you go super windy conditions, he's second in DraftKings points in extremely windy conditions in the last 100 rounds in this field. So I'm going with Rahm as well. I'm contemplating fading Bryson. Now, the reason for this would probably be ownership. I think he's going to be extremely high owned. I think his length is going to make people just go to him when he sees 7,800 yard plus course. Like, shit, we got to play Bryson. The one worry I have about him is he hits the ball so high, especially off the tee. If this win and you look, you know, he's like 91st in strokes gained total in the last 100 rounds in extremely wind conditions. And when you shift over, but the thing is, when you shift over the moderate wind conditions, he's fifth. So I guess it really depends on this weather forecast for me when it comes to Bryson. If we're seeing 15, 18, less than 20 mile per hour winds for the week, I think he's a little bit more playable in my eyes. You know, and that's the way I'm going to go about it. But if I see the 25 to 30 mile per hour gust this weekend, this coming up weekend, it could be a fade for me. I'm just worried about the extreme ball, the height of his ball and getting caught up in that wind. And he's not the most accurate off the tee with that driver anyways. And so that wind could maybe do some extreme damage to some of his wayward balls. What do you think?
I'm not like, I like the bottom of the range. You talked about a little bit, a couple things, you know, that you said there just to chime in on, not to repeat everything, but you know, you mentioned like the 20 PGA Tour professionals that play in here. It's almost like the US Open where I talk about this all the time there, where like the year Gary Woodland won, even if Brooks had to come from behind and got that W, you almost didn't need him in your lineups because the way the lineup shook out, there was enough scoring from Gary already. And yes, if you had both, obviously that was better, but I'm just saying what happens is that it's tough to make those lineups as strong. And so guys like Rory and JT, I'd like to play more of, but it just, for me, I want to get Rahm, Bryson, even Spieth. One thing I like about Spieth is he's chasing the career Grand Slam and playing some of the best golf he's played in a long time. So I definitely don't mind that. I want to see what the ownership's like on Bryson. One of the things that stands out to me is just a, you know, it's a course that he should be able to beat up no matter what. And we'll see what the ownership is like, but I really don't care. He's just that good. He's got the all around game. The one thing that makes me think though, Kenny, is remember when he went to, where was it? I forget. It was one of the courses in Mexico and everyone's like, oh, he's going to figure this out. He's the scientist, the mad scientist, all that elevation be right up his alley.
Yeah.
And it was the complete opposite, right? He couldn't figure out a damn thing because he was lost. It's just not, he was out of his element. It didn't work out. Not, it's Bryson. He can figure anything out. And I love his play, but I like Rahm. I like Spieth. And then, you know, up top, it's, you know, pick your poison. I'm always a JT fan. You know, Dustin could come back. I know he, you know, said he was a little bit injured after the backflip off the yacht there, but maybe just didn't want to play and get prepped for this thing. But I certainly like starting, and I don't think it's really that bad. You talk about before Rory got that win. If Rory didn't win 2 weeks ago, again, the price might be very similar, but the odds favorite would have been, odds on favorite would have been probably John Rahm or Justin Thomas sitting right there. And they're still very close in odds right now with Vegas, but Rahm is $1,000 cheaper. So I can start my lineups there, still feel pretty good about that and get unique in other ways. But I do like the bottom range more than the top at first glance here, Kenny.
All right. So let's move on to this 9K range. I'll go ahead and start. I like Xander up top. Again, another guy who I think is a win is imminent. You know, across the board, really, really nice stats when it comes down to it. Good with his longer irons, long enough off the tee, top 10 bogey avoidance in the last 50 rounds. Good around the greens as well. I think he has the makeup to play well at this course. So I do like Xander. Hovland's going to be popular, and I think it's worth it. The guy's just been playing exceptional golf. You do worry a little bit about his short game, but he's been getting through that here lately, even with worries in his short game, mostly because he's hitting so many greens. And he was actually one of my other options when it came to my cash game cornerstones. He was going to be the highest priced golfer in my balanced type cash game cornerstones. And I don't mind using him in cash. And I like Patrick Reed, difficult course. There are some dog legs right to left. I think that actually play in his favor, where missing left will miss into a bunker, missing right will miss into the dunes and some of those crazy native grasses they got there. I think he can avoid a lot of that. So I like Patrick Reed. What about you?
Yeah, a lot of the same. One thing I'll just bring up quick too is I think, and I didn't bring this up earlier, but scrambling could definitely be, you know, bigger than we think, right? I don't know if a lot of people are talking about that or going to be talking about that this week, but any major, typically in general, scrambling is always necessary. And you've got a guy like Patrick Reed, who you just mentioned, who made me, you know, think about that. And it could be a worry for a guy like Hovland. Now, I think Hovland is one of the better players in the field. The thing about Hovland is, and I've talked about this in the past, and it links in with Xander as well, who I'm on in this range, is guys like, so Rahm, Xander, Hovland, and a guy later, Neiman, who we'll get to. Those are four guys that just don't make a lot of mistakes, Kenny. And even if they do, Answer could go into this group as well. It's just not something that they can battle back from it, right? They can get out of the situation and find their way back. And it, especially if it turns out, the thing about that, like, especially if it turns out to be a grinded out event, which it should be, it's a major. And if that weather picks up even more so, they all fit that bill. But then guess what? If there is scoring available and there is chances to go low out there, these guys can all still do it. So really like sort of anchoring my lineups with those guys, mixing and matching between them. So it's Xander and Hovland in here. The other guys I like, so Webb and Reed at the bottom stand out a little bit just for the all-around.
You worried about Reb withdrawing?
I have to wait and see. I know he did, WD was a neck injury, I believe, yep, or whatever he cited, but I don't know. We'll have to see. I'll definitely see closer to the event start time what he's saying, if there's anything we can glean from some of the you know, guys on Twitter or any back-end interviews, things like that we can find out from. But I do like his all-around game, right? I know that it's going to come down to, oh, he's not a bomber or whatever, but, you know, think about Pete Dye courses. You know, I know this is a bit of a longer one, but you've got some wind. If the fairways are rolling out some, he's a really accurate driver of the ball, great scramble. He won the Players, Pete Dye course. Like, there's definitely a guy you could play here with Webb Simpson, and Reed is similar in the sense of like, you know, the scrambling, the tough courses, the major-esque, like all that stuff that goes with them. The one guy we didn't mention, though, I guess Brooks didn't get mentioned. Hideki, everyone's, you know, off of now probably because he already won the Masters. But Colin Morikawa is the defending champion. I know it's a different course. That's kind of the cool thing about the PGA Championship. We're swapping courses year over year. But to me, Colin Morikawa is essentially Justin Thomas for way cheaper, because what's the one thing we're worried about with Thomas right now, who we didn't even talk about at the top, is his putter has been off. He's been striking the ball like, you know, on fire, tee to green on approach, etc. Just can't make a putt. So, you know, he could get hot, but that's the same thing why we play Morikawa. There's definitely more risk in it. He's not the full class yet of what Justin Thomas is by any means, but at 9,800, he just won the thing with a, you know, what was it? A par four drivable par four. He makes the shot he needs down the stretch, takes out Paul Casey. You know, it's not saying much. It's Paul Casey, but he still did his thing over the rest of the field. And so here, I'll definitely take some shots on him, especially if Xander gets super popular. That's a good little leverage spot there where I think much less will be on Colin Morikawa at 9,800.
Yeah, I definitely think he won't be as popular. You're definitely right about that. Let's move on to this 8K range. Go ahead there, Tampa. I know you like a guy up top.
Well, I don't love this guy, but I said to you before, I said that you were sort of laying some stuff out for me, and I feel like I never play Cam Smith, and I should probably stick to it when we're talking about major prowess. But realistically, he's shown up at majors. He showed up at the Masters. He showed up again at the Masters. He just got a win. I know people will write it off, but there's some confidence to still come. That winning's winning on the PGA Tour. I don't care. Look at the Ryan Palmer win. Everyone, you know, Rahm carried him, etc. It's probably true. It was John Rahm on the other side with him, but at the same time, it didn't change his confidence levels. And look how well he's played ever since. It's a similar thing here. Now, Cam Smith was already playing good golf. So again, talk about a guy that can scramble, solid around the green game. I worry if he can hit enough fairways, but if he does, and if he is hitting the fairways, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's got some upside there. I don't know how popular he'll really be, because we've got, you know, another guy that I think is like Hovland, just a great play regardless of ownership, Daniel Berger, who just, you know, had to run his ass up the board at the Byron Nelson just to tack on what was already going to be a price that's a little bit too low there. But back to the well on Zalatoris, Finau in majors, like this range is stacked, Kenny. So how do you think this shakes out? Do you think this takes away from some of that ownership at the top and more people end up going balanced because of this range? Because I could name more names. There's, you know, Finau, Fitzpatrick, M. There's a conversation to be had around all these guys. And then, you know, I'm playing Louis at 8,000 in a major. So, you know, this is the thing for me. If everyone's going to go up to JT, Rory, Rahm, Bryson, Spieth, etc., I don't mind some of these lineups that start at Morikawa or start at Xander to be able to fit more of this range in. What are your thoughts here on this 8K range in general?
Well, what I think the 8K range is great. It's one of my favorites. I'm going to be playing a bunch of guys here. But when you think about it, I mean, if you're going to play Rory, you're going to play JT. If you're going to play Rory or you're going to play JT up top, the 8K range is your next range that you're going to go to. You're probably going to skip the 9K range because it's going to leave your lineup construction very, very difficult to produce.
Oh, you're definitely skipping it, but you only get one, really, maybe two, because Rory's 11.5. That's 7,700
left. Yeah, I think you could still get two 8K guys in there if you do like a Hatton and a Berger or something like that. I think it's definitely very doable. You'll still leave yourself over $7,000 for each golfer left, I think, if my math is right, which is probably not what's going to happen because I suck at math. But I think the 8K range, I like the 8K range a lot. I like Cam Smith. Cam Smith was another one of my possible cash game cornerstones. So I had like six guys that I keyed on. It was Rory, Hovland, Cam Smith, and then my true second cash game cornerstone is Daniel Berger, one of the better players in the wind out there. First in strokes gained total in extremely windy conditions. I think he's seventh in strokes gained total in moderate wind conditions. He plays well in the wind. He had a great Sunday this past week, and he is coming in form. The guy has a couple of wins in the past year and a half. You know, it could be his time here, coming here soon. So I like Berger as my second cash game cornerstones. How popular do you think Finau is going to be at $8,600? Because there's a couple of guys I like other than him. And the thing about Finau at that price, I think he always seems to be popular, but he is coming off three or four missed cuts. What do you think?
Yeah, he usually still gets some sort of ownership. This is the first time that I would I don't know. I still think he gets it, to be honest. But I would only, the only reason I would question is because obviously we know everyone's in on Berger, and for good reason. Everyone's been on Willie Z, loving it. Scheffler is another guy. Fitzpatrick, people like to play. And then if the Cam Smith love gets picked up a little bit, then, you know, they can't really have them all. So what is he, 12 to 15%? That's still pretty low for what we're used to with Finau, especially in a major.
He's just playing so poorly that I don't know if he can do it. And I really like Scotty Scheffler this week. I mean, long enough off the tee, good enough around the greens, good in the wind. So I like Scotty this week. You know, he's shown himself at majors recently here in the past. So I like Scotty Scheffler. I like Fitzpatrick playing a difficult course. Again, we sort of talked about this last week, harder the course, the more I like Matthew Fitzpatrick with his short game and his putting. Accurate off the tee, avoids the bogeys. So I like Fitzpatrick. I like Ustie down below. You play Ustie in majors. That's just what you do.
I always do. But do you like Hatton, though? What about Hatton?
I do. Same price? I do like Hatton. Again, it's going to be a longer course. And he's not exceptionally long off the tee. He's right in the middle of the road, but that's really all where you need to be. Middle of the road is still 300 yards off the tee. And the thing is, you know, he's so good with his longer irons. Second in proximity from 200 plus, second in proximity from 175 to 200 in the last 50 rounds. I think that could be very, very helpful this week. I do not know how popular he will be. I don't think he might. I don't think he'll garner the attention that he had, I'd say, 2, 3, 4 months ago when he was, you know, top 10-ing, top 15 every event. So you might be able to get him a little bit discounted. We'll see him on an ownership guru. But I do like Hatton down a lot this week, and I'll be playing a lot of them. I think the price is definitely fair.
Yeah, so just back real quick while we're here, the you know, your example. So it does work. Like, if you get Berger and then Hatton or Ustie in with Rory, it leaves you around 72, 7,300. So you can definitely hop down and find some guys. So I actually do think
And then you can end up going like one guy in a 6K and then one guy in a high 7 and one guy in a low 7 and still be able to put out a pretty decent lineup.
So twofold, I will say this. Yes, you can. And that's what I think some will do, but that's sort of why you got to mix it up a little bit, is that you know this because you've looked over it and we're about to get there, but people want to play these guys that we're about to get to. This 7K range has a lot of the names that you're going to see people gravitate towards, especially here. Paul Casey, Corey Connors, Sam Burns, who we just talked about, Abe Anser, Neiman. They always get love in these tournaments. So all I'm saying is that range will still, you can't do it all, right? So you definitely want to mix up some of your builds. It's possible to be done, but I think that's where a lot of people will look to go into the 7K range and maybe only end up with one of those guys. So Rory Berger would be a good starting point.
I think it comes down to how much you like the 9K. If you're not a big fan, and I would just go jump up to Rory or Rahm or something and just, you know, go out, or maybe even two 10K guys, go like Spieth, Bryson or something like that.
Yeah, really, like it's kind of like what you said, and depends on how much you love Rory. Like you said that too, because if you go Rory Berger, you end up in pretty much the same range as if you ran like an X Hovland Reed and then ran into that same range. Then you got the same three plays at the bottom, but I got three dudes at the top. You got him, Berger, and someone else. So then I'm fading Berger for a 9K guy. It really comes down to Rory and Berger. And again, we'll see what happens as the week goes on, but go ahead here, Kenny.
I think the most I'll have Rory is 25% because I don't think he'll be more than that. And so I have 25% of GPPs with him in my cash game lineup. So that still leaves 75% of my GPPs to go elsewhere, which I think is plenty enough. Now it still leaves about 60, 65% of my bankroll devoted to Rory McIlroy, which is sort of what I want. So that's how it's going to work for me when I do my lineups. In the 7K range, I'll go with my third cash game corner. So it's going to be Joaquin, the Dream, Neiman. I always talk about this with Joaquin. His ball flight is so low. It's that piercing low ball flight. It's going to get a lot of roll, and I think it's perfect for this course. I bet him earlier in the year for the Open Championship because I think that type of ball flight, that type of play off the tee would go really well in that type of situation. And Kiawah, it's like a poor man's links course. I mean, if you think about it, it's like the front nine goes out and then in, the back nine goes out and in right by the water. It's very, very similar. So I like Joaquin as my third cash game cornerstone pick. I think all three of the guys that I picked so far have a very, very, very good chance of winning. So what it was before, I have Rory, Neiman, and Berger. Instead, it would have been Hovland, Berger, and Cam Smith. So those are the directions that I was going. And I decided to take the higher road because I honestly think that Rory and my final pick, which I'll just go ahead and go, it's going to be Emiliano Grillo at 7K. He's my punt play this week with a really good form coming in, hitting a lot of fairways, iron play exceptionally strong, not the worst in the wind. Some of his best performances have come on past Palom. He seems to putt better there. I think a lot of poor putters tend to putt better on past Palom Green because, I mean, it's not very grainy. Like, you know, that's one thing that you can just, you know, not even think about when you go and hit it. So I'm going with Grillo as my fourth cash game cornerstone. So my cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Rory McIlroy at 11.5, Berger at 8.7, was it? Yeah, Berger 8.6, Berger 8.7, Neiman at 7.8, and Grillo at 7,000. It still leaves you right around 15K. Now, what I thought the other one was going to be Hovland, Smith, Neiman, and Berger. So it's either Hovland and Smith or Rory and Grillo. And I honestly still think Grillo and Rory have a better win expectancy than Hovland and Smith. And that's just because of how high Rory's win expectancy is this week. So that's why I'm going in that direction. It's basically just all about Rory. Now, if you want to go the other way and go balance, I have no problem with that because it literally took me till like 2 minutes before I started the pod to finally figure out which way I was going to go when it came to my cash game cornerstone. So I like both. I just decided that I've been going a little bit more aggressive and I'm going to keep going with that. And I think there's going to be more misses this week than people think, even with the soft pricing that I think still 5 or 6. I don't know if it's going to be single digits like it has been, but maybe 15% or less this week. Now, I could be wrong. All the guys can make it. But I just think the win and all these different factors, there's going to be some misses this week for some popular players, especially in cash. So that's the way I'm going with my cash and cornerstones. Why don't you go over the 7K range, the rest of the 7K range, and I'll go over a couple of my other favorites as well.
Well, I was going to ask you first, because I thought you were rolling the top here, but what about Adam Scott at 7,900? We talked a little about Hatton. We're about to talk about guys like Sergio, Bubba, Leishman, Day. Like, they're all in this range. What are you doing with Adam Scott? Because seems underpriced, but it's tough, right?
He just hasn't been really playing great. I think his ownership's going to be extremely low. So if you're a game theory guy, he could be a play, but I'm not going to be on.
Okay. I was going to say, because, you know,
I'd rather play Shane Lowry. There's been a little bit more. You've seen a little bit more of of his game. I think he had a top 10 finish here recently. I think a lot of the Europeans should take well to this type of course. You know, I know this is far back, but if you remember, it was 91. The Ryder Cup. I mean, the Euros back then, I think they had just won their first Ryder Cup in a long time in 89. They were coming back to United States soil. I don't know when the last time they won in the U.S. was, and they took it down to the wire. It came down to a Bernard Langer missed putt, a 3.5-footer on 18 for the United States to win that cup. And I know it's a long time ago, but I think the Euros would feel more comfortable on this type of course when you compare it. Say a Euro was playing this course for the first time and a guy from California was playing this course for the first time, I'd probably lean towards the European when it comes down to it, because I think they're going to be more used to this type of golf.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Lowry. That was one of the guys I was going to talk about right away. You know, some really solid results lately, strong on approach. Tee to green gaining, you know, 7 of his last 8. You don't get stats for the Masters, of course, but got to assume doing quite well to finish 21st there. 8th at the Players, Pete Dye, big field, strong field. 9th at the Heritage, you know, major champion, held off Brooks when Brooks was on his run at the Open. Brooks has spoke highly of him because of that, played practice rounds with him, and just said nobody's as good of a golfer as this guy. And again, everyone's going to play the guys I like that are around him as well. Answer, Neiman, Casey, all make sense. Connors, of course, but this is just what I'm talking about. If you can get some major moxie in a major, again, what if the wind picks up? What if the grinder, you know, the scrambling around the green game, he needed it at the Open. All of those things were utilized there when he won. So I like Shane Lowry for that reason. Connors is just hard to go away from because of how good he's been playing. You talk about the Masters when he was 6,900 and did his thing. They didn't really raise his price. It's 7,600 here. It's not really that far. So could get on him. Talked about, you know, a couple things here with Leishman, Sergio, Bubba. I guess that's where I struggle with Sam Burns, because yes, he's coming in super hot. His game seems good for it. Everything there. But these guys, again, Sergio's a little risky because he's just been so horrible in majors in general, ever since he won the Masters, it's been bad. But Leishman, I talked about earlier with the Cam Smith W, they played some good golf. I'm sure he can come out and do his thing. And then Bubba, what are you going to say about Bubba? I mean, it's $7,500. You're not really investing that much to get him into some lineups. He can drive it out there, get creative around the greens, make putts. I think this would be a type of spot for him as well. So that's sort of my guys in the 7,500 and above range. Any other thoughts in there, Kenny?
Yeah, Lowry's my favorite play, other than Neiman up there. I'll play Casey. I'll play Answer. But I really like Shane Lowry this week a lot. So I'm going to go in that range. Let's move down to this under 7,500. I mean, Sam Burns is up there. I would say one of my favorite plays might be Keegan Bradley.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
You know, Keegan's been, you know, flexing his muscles and his game's gotten real tight. And so, I sort of like Keegan Bradley this week a little bit. I think he's cash viable too. I mean, I think didn't he play pretty well here in 2012? And again, it's the type of green where you see poor putters do well, and he's shown some pretty good moxie this year. I think a couple of runner ups. I like Kegels this week. I'm going to go with him. I think Matt Wallace is another guy, a grinder type who is really, really good around the greens. I think he makes a lot of sense with that European connection. Max Homa is interesting just because Bones is on his bag this week. So you got Bones, you know, who's won all these majors, who's seen Kiwa before with Phil maybe twice. I don't know, maybe not the first time. Maybe not the Ryder Cup, but at least in 2012. And, you know, Homa's hasn't been garbage. The guy's been playing exceptional golf. Charlie Hoffman, another guy. When it comes to just the stat model that I put up for this week, he's sixth in my model ranking in the last 50 rounds. You know, really long enough off the tee, really good with his long irons, really good at bogey avoidance too. His around the green game is a little bit suspect, but he's a guy at $7,300 that I'll put a little bit of risk on. Harris English, who showed a little bit of moxie this past week. There's a lot of guys in this. Lotus Siwoo Kim, another Pete Dye specialist. Now, the thing about going to Pete Dye specialists, this is not your typical Pete Dye course. A lot of those courses are sort of, you know, target golf type deals. This is sort of not target golf. I mean, I guess it is, but I mean, it's more of a link style course when it comes to it. So I don't know how much you can play that narrative this week, but I mean, he's there down there at 7,200. Cameron Tringali, another guy, 7,100. Matt Jones. I mean, there's a lot of options down here. That's why I don't think it's horrible going with Rory up top. I might have to disagree with Tampa just a little bit when it comes down to that, because there are so many options in this lower 7K range that you can punch in and still get a couple of 8K guys in there that I don't see too much of a problem with that. Now, if you want to go Rory in like a 9K guy, Rory with another 10K guy, that's when you're going to have – it just depends on your type of roster construction as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would just, again, say, though, like the fact you just said there's all these options means there's no conviction for a lot of people. And that's where the trouble runs into, right? They need these four random handpicked options that they think look like good plays to now fall in and make it all work. And then when it doesn't, they wonder what happened. Meanwhile, there's lineups smacking them up with 3 9K guys or something. And it happens all the time in these majors, especially at the US Open and the PGA Championship. So you know, with that said, Kenny, I love your Kegel call there. We'll have to get the title in, but Keegan Bradley certainly was on my radar. Just been playing some incredible golf. You mentioned the third back here in 2012, which was nice to see. You know, a couple guys. So, you know, what Matt Wallace makes sense. One guy, though, this is interesting to me. I looked into this. I had to look back a little bit further, but Brian Harman. And it kind of ties in a little bit, not just the Pete Dye stuff you mentioned with Siwoo, who I definitely like this week. Didn't mention enough, by the way, with Answer. Up above, Answer's another guy that just tears up Pete Dye courses. So I really like him this week and already gave my little speech on how he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And even if he does, he can grind it out for you, plays well in the wind, et cetera. But if you come back down to Brian Harmon here, yeah, you're the form. Everyone's going to see. So Matt Wallace just, I believe it was the Wells Fargo when I didn't, you know, no one could figure out why his ownership was so much. He had good form before that and some, you know, other events, 23rd, 18th and 34th, the Harmon form, 18th, 13th, 12th, 5th, third. Like, it's a guy just people think have no upside. And to tie it back in, I do agree with you, like, the length is a little bit different than what you're used to seeing, but with those wins, especially if you get a downwind or anything like that where you can have that, if you get the rollout, it will become somewhat of a, you know, an accuracy contest. And then if you don't have the accuracy, you want to have a good around the green game and a good putter, and that's what Brian Harmon has. So you've got that. And then going back to it was the US Open back in 2017, I believe. Yeah, 2017. I brought it up here with Brooks Koepka taking it down, and right behind him, Brian Harmon at 12 under. So, you know, it's not a guy that I would just shy away from, especially, you know, I do like Matt Wallace, but at the same price, you could go to a guy like Harmon right there. I like Bradley. I like your Homa call, Bones on the bag. That's worked out pretty well. Bones has made a nice little living on the side from hopping on guys' bags. He keeps jumping on winners. So Max Homa definitely makes some sense. I like your Hoffman call. I like Siwoo. Kokrak is another guy here that stands out to me, a little bit too cheap, just doesn't seem, you know, priced right for what he can do when he's on. Solid driver of the golf ball, avoids bogeys, can make those shorter putts, things like that, that we're going to require. And then what about Kuchar? I know you mentioned Grillo's your cash game cornerstone. Kuchar played a little bit of good golf here over the weekend. Any thoughts if that can carry over here? Another guy crushes out Pete Dye courses, can get accurate with it, played well at the match play, played well this weekend. I'm just thinking out loud here, but what about Matt Kuchar?
I just think he's too short. I think once you start getting to guys that average less than 300 off the tee, which Kuchar does, it's going to get a lot more difficult for those guys.
We'll have to see. I think the wind matters more for that. And if the bomber angle is just going to get, you know, blown up this week, then I definitely think there's still guys that can, you know, get through that. We see it all the time, right? Even this week, you look at the board, this week was talked about as, you know, a major bombers course, and KH Lee wins the thing. So you can definitely find guys that can sift through and find their way. But I agree with you. Like, you know, there's definitely something to be said about that. But I definitely also think some of these guys will sneak through with, you know, opportunity there. Chris Kirk, maybe another interesting guy at 7,000. Again, on a first look here, just looking at his numbers, 7th at RBC Heritage, 48th at the Players, 6th at the Valero Texas Open. Talking about Pete Dye, wind, needing to be accurate. Arnold Palmer's longer, got 8th there. Like, ever since he's come back, he's been good. Coastal courses, the Sony, got 2nd. Like, he kind of lines up too at 7,000. I might actually like him better than Kuchar just for all around stats across the board. Chris Kirk, 7,000.
Yeah, he's been playing well. I can get down with that. We'll have to see how it goes down there, because I'm trying to roster about 30, 35 golfers, and I already picked out like 40. So it's going to be tough for me to try and narrow it down. We'll have to see how it does as the week goes and I do a little bit more research. Let's move down to the 6K range. I'll go on my favorite play on the board, in the 6K range, not on the board. I know he hasn't been playing great, but I really like Dylan Fratelli at $6,500. And I guess one of the reasons, you know, for him, he finished 22nd at the Players. That's going to be his best finish. He did have a 5th at the Masters, you know, in the fall. I think he's going to be 2% owned, 3% owned, something like that. But the thing is, he's long off the tee and really, really good around the greens. It's a good combo to have, when it comes down to these cheaper guys. And he's one of the guys that caught my eye when it came down to it. So I like Dylan Fratelli. I mean, I think he's going to be, you know, 2% owned, 3% owned. So you can have 10% be triple the field. So you don't have to go balls to the wall on him because the form just hasn't been there. Just a random feeling about him. I like him a lot. Bernd Weisberger, another guy who's shown up in majors in the past, good around the greens. Charles has just been playing out of his mind the last month. It's the best golf he's played in the last month. Could be one of the chalkier players out here. We'll see how that goes. Ryan Palmer in the wind, or another Texas guy, Ortiz, another Texas guy in the wind. I sort of like him as well. Who do you like in the 6K range?
The 6,900 seems pretty stacked because Stewie Cink is also there. He's obviously been having a career year for him, for, you know, from what he's been doing, a couple wins in there, a good off the tee. you know, the drives are what's are so solid.
The thing is, dude, he's gotten longer off the tee. Yeah. I don't know what he has done, but he's gained something like 13 yards on his drive or something like that in the last year. Dude's been piping it out there. He's actually top 25 in driving distance in this field in
he's talked about it too.
48 years old.
Yeah, he's talked about it a little bit too with the Bryson effect, right? So he was, you know, it worked for him. He got there. He used it all the way to two W's. So I like that. I think that, you know, Ryan Palmer will be popular, but for good reason. He definitely seems a little bit too cheap. Cam Davis could get some love. Charles will be popular though, right there. So Palmer and Charles are probably the guys that get the most ownership. I can go back to the well on Thomas Peters. I think he missed the cut on the number here when everyone was on him this week at 8,600. Now you flip those two numbers around and they're 6,800. Can definitely go back to him. Christian Bezuidenhout, I like your call there at 6,500 on Fratelli, but another guy, Bezuidenhout, has shown up in majors, solid around the green game, can get the putter rolling at times. You know, it's out there, but bogey avoidance is good. Around the green game's good. Overall drives, like that's a guy that shows up, and we've seen him a few times show up in these majors. You know, I'm pretty tight down here, but just to, you know, talk through a few more, I wonder if HV3 will get any love, or Lanto Griffin, normally the guys that when they're under 7K.
I feel like HV3 really struggles in the wind. It could be just, I could be 100% wrong, but I just feel like anytime there's like gust that the guy just struggles. I don't know. I don't have numbers to back this up. I'm just, from what I've seen, it seems like he just struggles in the wind. So I don't know.
It's tough to say, like he's been there though, like in the PGA Championship, obviously that 80 on Sunday with Brooks was one to forget, but you know, had himself a good three rounds there. Just got a second at the RBC Heritage. If he can bring any of that over, he'd be interesting. And for once, you might get people not playing him. The other guy that was interesting to me here just off the wall is Thomas Dietrich, guy that you'll see over in the Euro Tour, but, you know, can be decent. And if you look at his results on PGA Tour events, you know, Mexico, Punta Cana, U.S. Open, and all, and like three times at Punta Cana in the wind, solid results, made the cut at the U.S. Open that he played in, you know, that sort of thing. And then Tom Lewis, I feel like we both talked about him a little bit, been riding him, good long irons, decent game, but, you know, again, taking more risk on with guys like this. Other than that, Kenny, nobody really down
under,
here.
Under 6,500, you're going with scraps. So Tom Lewis might be your best bet under $6,500 because it's scraps. Maybe even under $6,600 because Fratelli is one of my favorites, but it's not like he's been playing out of his mind. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it is a little tough to go down, down below this range. I'm sure there's going to be a couple of guys out there that ball out, but she's trying to find them. Good luck. We'll see. All right. Anybody we missed there, brother?
No, I think we got through it pretty well here. Like I said, it's Sunday night, so we're chopping through it. Things will change as the week goes on, but certain things, some good stances, I think that we can take.
Yeah, we both have our things we do as the week goes on, and we both have our final things on Wednesday. So, and we'll talk about that in a second. Let's go with our bets this week. First off, I got Rory at 18-1. I got that last week before on Friday, before he won the Wells Fargo. So I think it's 10-1 now. So I'll take that 18-1 and run. Hovland 25-1, Berger 33-1, Cam Smith 40-1, Neiman 70-1. I'll probably add one or two more as the week goes on. It is major week, so I'll probably add a couple more. But those are my five for the week so far.
Yeah, I'm going to wait and probably add Rory after he has a bad day one, and then just hope that if he does battle back, he battles all the way to the top. Other than that, he might be the first round leader. That's another way you could hedge that. But for me, just four right now. You mentioned Hovland at the top. I certainly like that. I got it at 25-1. I got Berger at 45-1. I got Keegan, who we talked about, at 80-1 with a top eight each way. And then I got Palmer at 225-1 with a top eight each way as well. Like I said, I'll look to see what else I can add. I don't know. The numbers are tighter here than the DK pricing is. Obviously, you know, softer pricing for Millie Makers and whatnot. But the betting numbers are strong here. There's not too much that I love right out of the gate, first off.
Yeah, I don't mind that Keegan, Brent. I might have to tail you on that. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how Keegan plays. One and done, I'm going Roy.
You got him?
I'm going, yeah, I think I still have Rory left.
Oh, you saved him. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't got much left, man. I think I got Hovland, so I'll probably burn him up and try him on here. I just think Hovland is so solid. The one thing, like you said, that worries me is that around the green game, but he's cleaned it up quite a bit, looked really good last time out. Of course, he's super popular this week, but, you know, makes some sense to me. And he's almost, you know, the capability of regardless of the weather, I don't think it matters for a guy like Hovland, right? He can just chop up either way and crush his thing. So I like Hovland quite a bit this week, so I'll probably use him.
All right, that sounds good. You can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find my articles on GupsCorner.com. My extensive course preview will be out tomorrow with stats to look for. Wednesday, I will have my final. I don't think I'm going to change my cash in cornerstone, so we're good. But I'll have my favorite DFS plays in every price range, my finalized betting card, updates to the course that I find out as the week goes on. So make sure you head on over to GupsCorner.com.
Yeah, you guys know where to find me. Same on Twitter at Toteg and Tambo. Hit me up there if you have any questions. Talked about it at the top of the show, rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself 10 bucks off the first month. This will definitely be the week to do it, to go through all of this roster construction stuff, see how the weather breaks out. Talk about it all on Wednesday. Tuesday night show is going to be myself, STL Cards, Noto, and we may have a special guest this week, not fully finalized just yet. So be ready for that. I'll retweet it out once it comes out. So that'll be a good show on Tuesday night. It's completely free. So definitely want to check that one out, get some closer to final thoughts as we get closer to the Wednesday. Other than that, good luck this week, guys.
All right, it's major week. PJ Championship, beautiful course. It's going to be fun. Let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.